The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It's Monday, the 21st of August, 2023, and you're on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organization leaders and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. A good morning. I hope you guys are enjoying the first cold front of the year. That's what I choose to call it. We had a weekend of storms. I hope that everybody survived. We have to look to our brothers and sisters on the west coast of the United States of America and hope that they survived their first hurricane in 80 years. I don't know if they were prepared for it, but I tell you what, I know we're not prepared for the opportunities that are rising and presenting themselves all around the world. Not only could we be offering this thing called disaster tourism, but we can be building models. We can be building models for countries across the globe where citizens are experiencing new weather phenomenon, many for the first, you know, weather phenomenon for the first time in their lives. The opportunities arise everywhere when you practice empathy, when you center empathy personally, collectively, and professionally. We could do it. We could definitely do it. Now to our Sand Dollar Live Read. Thursday the 24th and Friday the 25th of August, central bank representatives will be giving out Sand Dollars at Solomon Supercenter. Show your Sand Dollar-enabled digital wallet at the door and receive $20. Spend $18 or more in Sand Dollars at the register and get $5 back when you leave the store. This offer is limited to the first 100 customers to show their Sand Dollar-enabled wallet at each location. One top up per person, so as many people as possible can experience the Sand Dollar. For more details, visit any of the Sand Dollar social media pages or call 302-9880. 302-9880. Now, on to our on-the-clock Sand Dollar trivia giveaway. The central bank has asked me to pause the trivia giveaway until Wednesday. So for the next couple of days, we won't have any Sand Dollar trivia questions. We won't have any Sand Dollar trivia questions for a couple of days. But Wednesday, we will be back at it. I already have two questions lined up. I'm just going to throw them out for fun. Including today, how many days until the next public holiday in the Bahamas? Including today, how many days until the next public holiday in the Bahamas? That trivia question is inspired by that new Bayesian track, "I Ain't Going to Work Today." Producer, I don't know if you have that on the board. I want to say good morning and thank you to my Bayesian brothers and sisters for coming up with the anthem of my life. I love it. I love it. The song is just us. It's just us. Anyway, a quick trivia question. No prize attached, including today. How many days until the next public holiday in the Bahamas? All right. Joining me this morning, hopefully she is in the Zoom room, is Miss Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas. Some of the issues in the paper, but we're going to be looking at, I've asked Miss Wallace to join me as I take a look at the Sexual Offenses Act, Amendment Registration of Sex Offenders Regulations, and the amendment to that act. Producers, Miss Wallace in the Zoom room. Good morning, Miss Wallace. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. After last week's flurry of stories, all related to sexual violence and gender-based violence, I thought, let's have a conversation. I told my audience that I would spend the weekend taking a look at the sexual offenses amendments and the sex offender registry regulations. And I've asked Ms. Wallace to walk through that with me, and we will discuss some of the issues that have popped up on the timeline, in the headlines, over the last couple of weeks. Morning, Ms. Wallace.
Hello.
So I want to start here. The 13th Commonwealth Women's Affairs Ministers meeting is actually taking place, starts today. It's taking place at Atlantis Paradise Island Resort from the 21st to the 23rd of August 2023 under the theme Future. This meeting is hosted by the government of the Bahamas and it serves as the principal decision-making body for Commonwealth Women's Affairs ministers to review progress made towards achieving four Commonwealth priorities for gender equality and women's empowerment. At this year's meeting, a special focus will also be on the inclusion of women and girls with disabilities. The outcomes from the meeting discussions will shape the gender equality agenda for the upcoming Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting scheduled to take place in Samoa in 2024. What do you think our government is going to say at this meeting, Ms. Wallace?
It will definitely be interesting to hear. I'm sure that they are going to inflate everything that they think that they have done and pitch everything as gender work to people who are coming into the country from various Commonwealth states while continuing to ignore issues of gender at the national level and refusing to use the word gender because it's too, quote unquote, confusing for Bahamian people. I think it's very interesting that it would host this meeting of women's affairs ministers and be seen to, or try to be seen to, be taking the lead on issues of gender equality when they are quite literally shaking in their boots every time we try to address these issues nationally.
Yeah, I find it troubling. So many ministers attempted to convince us that we don't need a focus on gender, particularly a focus, a whole gender-based violence bill that is not required. But at the same time, they are not just participating in, but hosting the 13th Commonwealth Women's Affairs Ministers meeting, whose purpose is to ensure that gender equality issues are represented equitably and fully at the next Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting.
Definitely. They're not, I don't know, it's all about appearances, right? Let's look like we are engaged in these conversations. Let's look like we care about this and as though we are making an effort to improve things nationally by hosting, playing host to these meetings and trying to participate in discussions in ways that suggest that we take a particular stance while saying something completely different when we're talking to the Bahamian people, the Bahamian public.
Absolutely. I find that, that while we understand that our governments will be having quote-unquote different conversations in different spaces, right? The conversation you have with Bahamians, it's going to sound and it's going to look different from the conversation that you have with representatives from other governments, supranational agencies. But surely that's just a matter of tone, hey? And you should still be saying the same thing, even if you're using different words and you're speaking in a different way.
Exactly. We expect differences in language. Even at Equality Bahamas, we use different language when we're speaking to community members, when we're speaking nationally versus when we're speaking directly to the government, because these technical terms may not make a whole lot of sense when we're speaking to the general public, whereas we know that the government has a handle on these issues and the way that they are connected and the way that they are related, like CEDAW, like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It doesn't mean that we don't talk to the general public about the same things. We still mention CEDAW. We still make references to Belém du Pará, and we actually do quite a lot of work to educate people about these mechanisms, help them to understand what we mean when we're talking about human rights and the different areas of work that human rights entails and what we need to do at the country level to come into compliance with international human rights standards. So we're having the same conversations with different groups of people using different language, but we're not changing our position. The position is the same. And it would be great if the government got to that place where it actually had a position, where it actually has values and actually believes in human rights and is able to have these conversations on the international stage at Commonwealth events and still holding on to those same values, those same beliefs, and those same obligations when speaking to the general public and making the investment in the public to ensure that we can all engage in those conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, taking place at this event, I'm going to read, let me start here. I'm going to read from an article, Commonwealth Women's Affairs Ministers to Focus on Strategies for Gender Equality. And this is an article I found online with a quick search of the title of the meeting. And it says, I want to read here, Minister Winchcombe said, quote, a culture of gender inequality and gender-based violence destroys the very fabric of our societies and weakens our families, dot, 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 dot. That statement alone gives me the sense that the minister understands the work. He understands why the government created an entire department. Or in fact, why they, the Bureau of Women's Affairs to the Department of Gender and Family Affairs, but why is it so difficult for, why was it so difficult for the minister to say a culture of gender inequality and gender-based violence destroys the very fabric of our societies and weakens our families? And that's why we are enacting a gender-based violence bill to the Bahamian people. Well, you know, we know why.
How much of a leap from one to the next, but.
True. I mean, we know why. You can't say it because the government isn't passing a gender-based violence bill. But I just don't understand why it's so difficult for ministers to say these things to us that they say with such ease to people in the global community.
Yeah, it's also one thing to acknowledge what the consequences of gender inequality and gender-based violence are. That's one thing. And it's another thing to refuse to be complicit in it.
True. True, true. Well, listen, the event taking place from the 21st today to the 23rd of August includes several other events. An online civil society roundtable organized by the Commonwealth Foundation, a senior officials meeting, and a high-level side event hosted by the spouse of the Prime Minister, Mrs. Anne Marie Davis. The conclusions drawn from these events will be presented to the ministers informing their discussions. Are you aware of any local NGOs that would have participated in the online civil society roundtable?
I have no idea, because as we, I think we all know, the Ministry of Social Services and Urban Development, as well as the department, are quite terrible at communication and are very inconsistent in their engagement with civil society, although they have mailing lists that they use whenever they see fit, whenever it works for whatever their agendas are.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we at Equality Bahamas received an invitation to participate in a particular event taking place today. We received that invitation last week. So this is the level that we're operating at, even for Commonwealth meetings, you know, and I don't know, can we say that the expectation is that NGOs, advocates, human rights leaders have nothing to do and just leave their schedules open or can drop whatever they're doing to attend the last minute meeting? Or is it that the government doesn't actually want our participation in these meetings and they're just kind of sending off these invitations a couple hours in advance to say that they did it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to read another quick quote from the article, and then let's move on to some other stories that have popped up in the news. And we take a look at the most recent amendment to the Sexual Offenses Act, speaking specifically to sex offender regulations. So let me just read this quick quote from the Acting High Commissioner of the Bahamas, Marche Mackey, who said, "The meeting is not just about demonstrating commitment and progress. It is also about acknowledging the challenges we face on the issues of gender equality and garnering the support of our Commonwealth family to aid in our acceleration of the critically important issues affecting women." This will be the 13th Triennial Commonwealth Women's Affairs Ministers Meeting, and it will be chaired by Minister Obadiah Wilchcombe. End of story. Let me take a minute here. So I got some text before I read it. I've got a text here, Ms. Wallace. "Good morning, Ms. Green and guests. So how you want the people to have a complete gender violence bill when we have MPs allegedly abusing women while they're quote-unquote supposed to be bringing these bills forth?" And so I think the texter is asking us to maybe moderate our expectations. And I will paraphrase, or I will share what I inferred from that text, which is maybe we need to ask this question. Is the culture of the political class, right? Is the political culture such that we shouldn't expect a bill or an act to address sexual violence from a government, both opposition and administration, who have been ineffective at addressing sexual violence, allegations of sexual violence, claims of sexual violence, and evidence of sexual violence in the public domain, and allegations of sexual violence among their colleagues?
I mean, it's a great point. Maybe we need to make a distinction between our expectations and our demands. You know, our demands being what is required, what is right, what is just, and our expectations being a little bit different because we understand the context within we are advocating, right? The context where we are having these conversations and what is happening politically and culturally. And this is why I raised the point about what Wilchcombe said about there being a culture of gender inequality and gender-based violence. Particular ministers, particular members of parliament are complicit in that, and they participate actively in that culture. And as the texter is saying, perhaps that's why we're not seeing more movement on items like the gender-based violence bill.
Right. In the taxi cab union is calling on the Ministry of Transport to support its call or need for a ethics code among taxi drivers. We see in the United States of America, the SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, its members have forced a conversation on whether SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, needs a code of ethics to guide the behavior of those supreme judges. Do you think it's time that we have a code of ethic for MPs and candidates that's governed by an independent body?
Oh, past time.
Absolutely.
Time for that.
Absolutely. Producer, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to read from this article from last week, Friday, serial groper to be released from prison. And then I've got a couple more articles on deck. Monroe tells sex attack victims to report disrespectful officers. Married women, quote, more likely to experience non-consensual sex, close quotes. And we oppose abortion, even in cases of rape. Pastors say they support sanctity of life after case involving 11-year-old girl. And then the answer to the trivia question is 50 days. There are 50 days, including today, until the next public holiday in Texas. All I get is a giant bag of Gnep. Today, the only prize I get is a giant bag of Gnep. You text back and let me know if you down to go to Gnep Town. Anyway, you're on the clock with Erin Green. Joining me is Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas. We're talking GBV. We're talking Sexual Offenses Act and the Sex Offenders Registry. We'll be right back.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means you got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. You gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
Alright, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want no.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know. And nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then if you get the pin from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pin.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you're saying.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Vaccines are essential for new and returning students. Vaccines also protect fellow students, teachers, staff, and other members of the community from serious illnesses and even death. As you begin your back-to-school preparations, ensure that your children's vaccinations are up to date. All vaccines are available at all public health clinics.
This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and USAID.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green. I'm speaking with Miss Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas. Ms. Wallace, just before we get back into our conversation, I just want to respond to a couple texts. I got a text. It says, what about these potholes, Erin? Listen, I want to talk more about that tomorrow, but Ministry of Works, y'all just put up a WhatsApp. Y'all just put up a WhatsApp number and y'all stop wakening. Do y'all not see the roads? Do you not see the massive potholes opening up again, and they're inspectors? Do you not see the work that y'all paid people to do is obviously not up to par? Also, do you not see the need for an investigation into the quality of materials that are now being used to fix the roads? Y'all don't see that? I know y'all don't see that. Y'all don't see plenty of things, just like the police who have stopped seeing people commit traffic offenses. Somebody asked me if I'm going to congratulate our basketball players on the big historic win over Argentina. Listen, let me show you all a why. I want to talk about that on Friday. But more importantly, yeah, we're going to show them plenty love. We're going to show them plenty love. But this is what we expect them to do. This is what we expect them to do. Four NBA players. This isn't like Aaron Bailey. who had to practice in the gym with no trusses. We can talk about that tomorrow too, right? Put on a bus, bus went on a boat, then they had to ride all the way to the tournament in South America. These guys are great. We know that. This is what we expect from them. Now, we congratulate them for every effort that they put in, for making themselves feel available. This is what we expect from them. We got four NBA players on our team. They did an excellent job, though. They did an excellent job. We can talk about it more on Friday. But also, I want to talk more about the non-NBA players, because sometimes we act like it's just the NBA players that cause us to win. We got a full team of talented international stars, not just the ones who play in the United States of America. All right, Ms. Wallace, how you doing?
I'm good.
All right, so the first article I wanted to take a look at, if you don't mind. In fact, let me ask you, which one of those at first? Serial groper to be released. Monroe tells sex attack victims to report disrespectful officers. Married women more likely to experience non-consensual sex, or we oppose abortion even in cases of rape.
Let's start with the serial offender.
All right, serial groper to be released from prison. It's a troubling, troubling matter for me. I get a number of questions, Ms. Wallace, that arise from it. Most importantly, if this gentleman committed offenses, right? The minister responsible, Wayne Monroe, at one point when asked, what about charges for the offenses he mentioned where the gentleman groped a reporter who was conducting an interview at the prison and groped staff in the magistrate's court during a trial? When they asked, like, were charges filed? The minister said that's a matter for the complainants, right? And my thing is, if an offense occurred in the courtroom, witnessed by the magistrate, witnessed by court officers and staff, or occurred in the prison with prison staff that witnessed it, why would the complainant need to make a complaint? Why would we have to rely on the complainant making the complaint? Surely the magistrate who witnessed it or the court staff who witnessed the offense would petition for the charge to be filed even if the complainant didn't want to.
It's one that we could have answered with the gender-based violence bill, right? When we look at the duty of care and duty to report by particular people who work in specific spaces. When you witness acts of violence, when an act of violence is shared with you, you know, which people are required to make a report?
Absolutely. But this has already been addressed in legislation like the Child Protection Act that requires adults who witness an offense to report it, right?
Right.
So we're aware that was particularly a particularly troubling matter for me. Some of the questions that arose there seems to be like a timeline for being on the register, right? So you've been put on the register, and then after 10 years, you can apply to have your name removed from the register. Is this a provision that sits well with your advocacy group?
There's so much to be said about this register, Aaron. We raised a lot of questions when this was being discussed over the last few years, mm-hmm. about the effect that the register was expected to have, particularly in places like Nassau that are very small. Mm-hmm. You know, usually when you see a sexual offender's registry, there are particular stipulations that are put in place. You cannot live within a certain distance of a school, things like that. Can we effectively do that on this island or any other island?
Well, I mean, it's a matter. See, this is it. It's a matter of policing strategies, right?
We can look at this announcement by Monroe that this person is being released. What does that announcement mean? So now you're telling me that this person has done all of these things. This person has shown you that there has been no rehabilitation and there are no intentions of this person to stop doing what they've been doing, what they were put in prison for in the first place. So you're putting the onus on me to memorize this face and name and avoid this person.
Right. The state has a duty of care. There are many, many duties of care in this instance. They have a duty of care to us, the public, generally. They have a duty of care to the victims, right, who the offenses were committed against, and particularly after putting an offender on the register, they have a duty of care to the offender, right? And mm-hmm. So, like you say, it feels like you're putting the duty of care on us.
Exactly.
A, to protect ourselves from them, but B, you also put you shift the duty of care from yourself, who has the duty to ensure that this person is safe, right? You've shifted that off of yourself and then said to us, now look here, y'all don't commit any offenses against this person. Surely there should be a policing strategy that aims to protect registered sex offenders from retribution or vigilante justice or violence.
Yeah.
I got you. Have you guys produced a model, a draft legislation for the elements that you think should be in the bill or in the act?
Regarding the sexual...
Offenders registry?
No, we haven't.
All right, so let me...
You know, there was another NGO that was engaged in consultation on this before it was passed, and yeah. I don't think that they were in support of it.
I think that's Rise Bahamas, right?
No. I think Rise Bahamas was also engaged, but there was another organization that did not support it because evidence showed that it wasn't particularly effective. And actually, there are ways that it reduces reporting. So, for example, if there's a case of incest, your brother molesting your child, are you more or less likely to report when you know that this name and you share this family name would be added to the register? There are these kinds of issues
mm-hmm.
that came up, and I don't think that there was sufficient evidence to really support this particular change, this establishment of the sexual offenders registry. There are a lot of issues that should have been discussed before this was done with technical experts, with other countries that have done similar things and have used alternate measures, and also with the general public to understand what is the purpose of the registry.
Mm-hmm. Now, the minister said that they don't intend to make the register public, right? Which seems mm-hmm. counterintuitive to me. Mm-hmm. The whole point of a register is to enable the public to protect themselves from registered sex offenders. One of the reasons the minister gave was that in other jurisdictions, it was shown that the public resulted in a great number of attacks against registered people. Do you think that that is sufficient to not make the register public?
Absolutely not. It's not. It's interesting to see when these kinds of, I guess, potential issues keep the government from doing what it ought to do or in a way prescribes for the government the way that it goes about taking a particular action. And we hear these kinds of things all the time. It came up and it keeps coming up when we talk about marital rape, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about putting a law in place and people continuously talk about the 1% chance that the law might be used or misused.
Yes, absolutely.
And the focus is on protection of the person who is the offender.
Absolutely. I've got a text here. I feel like that prisoner would be sent to a deserted island to be rehabilitated, because it's scary for women out here knowing that this man would be free. So I got a question. You know, what if in the exit interview and subsequent interviews and engagements with an offender, it is determined that that offender is likely to reoffend, or even further, that they seem to be determined to offend or reoffend, right? What are the policy responses that we can turn to? Things like what the text has suggested. Should we consider a living facility on a, right, where access to the island by the public is restricted? Offenders are not incarcerated, they're not in prison, but they live, there's a great proximity between them and the general public. But this is only for serial offenders and offenders that give an indication that they're likely to reoffend or that they are determined to offend and reoffend.
What is happening in prison?
What do you mean?
Are we waiting for people to be released to decide that it's time for some intervention and rehabilitation?
So you're suggesting that we need strategies and responses during incarceration for rehabilitation to make the person more likely to not reoffend?
Absolutely. I think we still have a very antiquated and rather inhumane view of incarceration and of prison, right? It's just put all the animals together and let them live like animals since they want to act like animals, but then the animals get re-released.
Yeah.
And are expected to behave like human beings.
Yeah.
It's not reasonable.
And we're not saying that these people are animals. We're saying that they are being forced to live in conditions that even animals shouldn't live in. And they're being treated like animals. But there's
people characterize them as animals, right? Oh, they're animals. This animalistic behavior that got them in there. So treat them like animals in there. And it's this idea that, well, we're going to punish you with inhumane treatment because that's the way that you behaved when you were on the outside, ignoring the fact that they're going to be released.
Yeah.
Going to come out and magically be better people because they've been punished for years and years and years and made to use slop buckets and whatever else is going on in prison.
Absolutely. Here's a question. Should those particular offenders, right, those who are serial offenders and are likely to reoffend or present as determined to reoffend, should that offender be required to wear an EMD while they are on the sex offender registry, electronic monitoring device?
That's one measure of many.
Okay.
Right? Because that's also not going to rehabilitate. I think rehabilitation needs to be at the top of the list.
Okay, but here's the question. Can you force someone who has completed their prison sentence to engage in that type of therapy? Or are you saying that it must be mandatory as a part of the sentence?
It should be a part of the sentence. This should be a part of the program while incarcerated. And there should be reviews that are happening throughout the time of the sentence. And there's probably some legal work to be done around what happens when time is up, time is served, and this person has made no progress whatsoever. This person poses a threat to the public. The answer can't be, we're going to announce to the public and make them responsible for their own well-being and their own safety and security. That's absurd.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to another. Well, I want to move on to another article. Do you want any last words before we shift from this space? Some lawyers. I'm going to reach out to Tenille Burrows and Rise Bahamas and look for the name of the second organization to ask some more questions about the act at a later time. Things like who determines whether an offender's name will be added to the registry. Is it the court? Is it the minister? Is it the legislation? Because even after reading the statute, the legislation, the act, it's difficult to make a clear determination as a layman with no practice in this area. Is the registration of the offender statutory? Is it determined by the courts, or is it solely at the discretion of the minister?
Well, I noticed in the reporting, it came across as though the minister was giving the offender the opportunity to not be listed or not have his name announced, which is very confusing.
Right. It's at the minister's discretion whether once you have been registered as an offender, that will be announced to the general public. It appears as if the question of whether you will be registered is statutory, right? There's a list of offenses in the act that clearly say, you know, what is an offense that will result in being registered. The following offenses under this act, in fact, it's called specified offenses in relation to which reporting obligations under sections 26A to 26J apply. And so that would be rape, procuration, the pimp prostitute dynamic, sexual intercourse with a person under 14, sexual intercourse with a person between 14 and 16, intercourse, mental disorder, incest, intercourse with a dependent, sexual assault by spouse, indecent assault, defilement of young person on premises, forcible taking or detaining of person with intent, unlawful detention with intent to have sexual intercourse, abduction of unmarried person under 16, abduction of unmarried person between 16 and 18, child pornography. Do you think there's anything missing from that list? I think there may be a few items that should be on that list.
Yeah, I need to see the list in print, but I noted a few that are definitely missing. But I think we need to be clear on what determines whether or not it's mandatory for the person to be on the list and for an announcement to be made to the public. Because like I said, that report last week,
yeah,
the wording of it.
It gives the impression after reading the legislation, I would also infer that the minister himself determines whether a public announcement is made, right? That this person is being released. And whether an announcement is given, an acknowledgement is given to specified individuals who I presume are victims, right, of the mm-hmm. violence. I think it's at the minister's discretion. So I want to apologize to Pumpkin Eater, who actually called in last week and referenced that. Right, I hadn't read the act yet, and I couldn't believe it. I was flabbergasted that it would be at the minister's discretion was made or not. Surely if the act warrants being placed on the list, then a public announcement is warranted and should be mandatory.
Right, but to set up an entire interview with an offender, to give them the opportunity to convince you as the minister that this should not happen is beyond problematic, beyond a problem.
Absolutely. And if I were the minister, I would tell them reword that, rewrite that. I don't like that. I don't want that responsibility. Yeah. And I don't want to suffer with, right, all of the speculation that may arise in instances, right, arise when that happens. Further, I would say to the minister, you could do a better job with your language, because it's your language that concerns us most about how you interpret the provisions before you.
But the language used by the minister, though, I find quite helpful for understanding what he actually believes, where he actually stands on these issues. And I've never heard anything said by the minister regarding sexual violence in particular that suggested that women and girls should not experience gender-based violence or sexual violence at all and are not at fault for what they experience and should have access to justice and to avenues for healing and all of the recovery that they need.
Yeah.
It's always somewhere out there about there's some victim blaming in there. There is a shirking of the responsibility of the government. It's placing the responsibility on the public. It's very, very troubling. It's horrible language. And it's important for us to pay attention to the language to understand what's underneath it and to read into that culture that was mentioned.
Absolutely. I want to read another quote before I get to some of the texts. A quote from the Minister of National Security, Mr. Wayne Munro. This quote is taken from an interview he did. It's Eyewitness News. It was last week. And I think it was the interview he did immediately after on in a break during the conference on cyber attacks, right, and digital and online security. Here's the quote. If you are offending against young children, when you come to be released, whoever occupies the chair I occupy will have to issue a general notice to the public that you as a sexual offender is being released. So please stop it so you don't have to be subject to after you complete your sentence, and you will have to do all of your sentence, the public must then be protected against you. I found that quote troubling, right?
That's a great example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because you're not relying on us, the register itself as a deterrent, sir, are you? Surely, wanting to be a wholesome member of society is the deterrent. Surely, understanding the rage, the intolerance from the wider community towards sexual violence and predation on children and minors is the deterrent, right? Not, oh, you don't want to be on a register because you may be embarrassed. That's not a real, it's not something I expect from the Minister of National Security.
No.
Further in that quote, he says, after you complete your sentence and you will have to do all of your sentence, right? I stick a pin there. But in this article, Serial Groper to be Released from Prison, it suggests, in fact, here we go. Here's the quote. Cooper was not charged for the indecent assaults he committed in prison, and instead lost remission time for that behavior. This is from the article. It's not a quote from the minister. Cooper was not charged for the indecent assaults he committed in prison and instead lost remission time for that behavior. But Mr. Munro says that you can serve your complete sentence, you will have to do all of your sentence.
Right.
I'm a little concerned about those discrepancies there, right? And why they're not lining up. And if the Bahamas Department of Corrections and the judiciary are aware of this, is this in law anywhere that if you've committed a sexual offense, you can't get time off for good behavior? These are just some things that had popped up for me, Miss Wallace. I don't want to make it a let's talk about Mr. Wayne Munro Day, but there's also another troubling article about people on parole. Right, the state can afford to keep people in prison. I'm very, very troubled. In fact, the article is parole system can reduce expense of prisoner upkeep. and the balance of rights and the duty of care? And has the state considered how it will balance the rights of everyone involved? These are all very, very concerning to me. We are just, I see we got a call in the last few moments. Ms. Wallace, good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning, how you do?
Good morning, dear guest. Yeah, I was tuned into the conversation, but I wanted to respond to one or two things quickly. Firstly, it was, you said about the expense of the prisoners, and then you mentioned something about the serial grouper who would grope the lady in court, and why is it that they would need to go through all the legal if it was witness, right?
Yeah, why
would
they complain?
It's the same thing with a police officer when a suspect is handcuffed and he's assaulted. It's basically the same thing as it relates to they're compounding this factor by the dog food that they dispense and give to the prisoners. That is the problem, you know, and people who can't afford the commissary stipend from outside members, they are subjected to dog food in the prison. And it is really inglorious. Some of the food they give, I wouldn't even give my dog, man. Bless up.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, 52. I'm going to get into that article, I guess, a bit more tomorrow, Miss Wallace. But it troubled me, and I think there are links to what we have been talking about, right? This idea that, it's too expensive to house prisoners, so we're going to release them into the public. But what we've touched on today, what are the rehabilitative initiatives that are available to the incarcerated or that are mandatory, right, as a part of the sentence? How are you preparing people to re-enter society, right? And whose onus is it? Whose duty is it to protect us from people who have been poorly socialized?
Big questions that we haven't even started to answer in just in general discourse, much less legislatively or in policy.
Right, absolutely.
Just being away the whole time through violence.
Right, and how do we expect somebody who is offending because of a psychological or expect them to rehabilitate themselves, right, in these conditions? To rehabilitate themselves is one thing in and of itself, but in these conditions, and I got a texter who reminded me, 52 is talking about food. We haven't even talked about the toilets or the lack thereof. I got another quick text to close off with, Ms. Wallace. Good morning. What is the fascination with the family island and criminality? No, we're not associating the family island with criminality. We're associating the family island and rehabilitation. That's what we're associating. They are communities far less capable of handling these persons in Nassau. Instead, put processes in place that would speak to these issues for the protection of all. So, Tex, I wasn't talking about creating a facility on an inhabited island, even. That's not what I was talking about. Right? And so we're not doing that to family islanders. We have an archipelagic exterior with at least 3,000 land masses. At least 3,000 land masses. Before we sell all to the rich, fancy tourists, maybe we could use some of them for our own needs and purposes. But I'm not dissing, Texter. I'm not dissing at all. I'm with you. I'm not trying to burden our family islanders any more than they are already burdened. Ms. Wallace?
Yes, I just want to say I respect the comment by the texter, because I always question that as well when people sort of suggest that we use family islands as a place for exile.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
No, man, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for joining me today. I always enjoy talking to Equality Bahamas, even though we don't row because we agree too much on these issues. I got to get a rowing show in there, Miss Wallace. So the
we
government
can find some things to row about, for sure.
Absolutely. We haven't even talked about marriage yet. You know how I feel about marriage.
Next time.
Yes, next time, ma'am. Anyway, thank you very much. Thank you to the audience for tuning in. And to the texter who got the correct answer, they are, including today, there are 50 days until the next public holiday. I'll contact you, see if you want a truckload of Ganep as your prize. Thank you for playing the game with me today. Our Sand Dollar Trivia will be back on Wednesday. I'll have another trivia question for you tomorrow, though. Have a great day, Bahamas. C.A. Newry is up next.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.